Hello, my name is Dr. Eric Herman, and I am a proud member of the Council of the Medical Specialty Societies, and we're here today to talk about long COVID and provide an overview. The Council of Medical Special Societies has brought together an expert panel of multi-specialty and multidisciplinary team to review long COVID. First, let's start with the definition. So, long COVID is an infection-associated chronic condition. And the persistence of chronic symptoms after an acute infection is not new to SARS-CoV-2 virus. In fact, we've seen this with others, including Epstein-Barr, Borrelia, influenza, polio, and West Nile virus. Long COVID also mirrors similar syndromes and symptom profiles that we see, such as myalgic encephalomyelitis, otherwise known as chronic fatigue syndrome, or post-exertional malaise. It is defined as a chronic condition that occurs after a SARS-CoV-2 infection. It lasts for at least 3 months, and it includes a wide range of symptoms or conditions that may improve, worsen, or be ongoing. While we are still researching a variety of the different mechanisms that are responsible for long COVID, we know that it is probably multifactorial. Some of the proposed mechanisms include persistent viral infection, immune dysregulation, microbiome changes, autoimmunity, microvascular clotting with endothelial dysfunction, dysfunctional signaling in the brainstem, amyloid deposits, disruption of the blood-brain barrier, and possibly serotonin reduction. As you're considering the diagnosis of long COVID in your clinical practice, a few things to keep in mind. First, laboratory confirmation or other proof of the initial SARS-CoV-2 infection is not required. Long COVID can follow any level of severity of the acute infection, including asymptomatic, mild or moderate, or severe. We stated that the onset must be for at least 3 months, but it can be continuous from the acute infection or delayed in onset. There are a wide variety of symptoms and conditions that are seen in long COVID. This also includes the exacerbation or amplification of pre-existing conditions. We know that there are over 200 reported symptoms that can affect patients and affect more than one organ system. These symptoms can range from mild to severe. They can resolve over a period of months or, in many cases, persist for months to years. No symptoms or conditions are included in the definition are required or exclusionary. We know that it can affect everyone, including children and adults, regardless of their health, disability, socioeconomic status, age, sex, gender, sexual orientation, race, ethnicity, or geographic location. And this, as we stated, can have a real profound impact on an individual's functional impairment, affecting their emotional and physical ability to work, attend school, take care of family, and practice self-care that is so important for recovery. So, what are the symptoms and conditions that we particularly see? Again, these can be mild or severe. Some of the symptoms we see the most include post-exertional malaise, persistent fatigue, difficulty concentrating, memory changes, recurring headaches, lightheadedness, fast heart rate, sleep disturbance, shortness of breath or cough, problems with taste and smell, and symptoms similar to IBS, including bloating, constipation, and diarrhea. Again, these are some of the more well-known prominent symptoms, but there are many, many other symptoms that are often observed. As we consider this from the framework of conditions, here are some of the more new or worsening pre-existing conditions that we often see associated with long COVID, including cardiovascular disease, arrhythmias, blood clots, chronic kidney disease, POTS, or postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and/or other forms of dysautonomia. Mast cell activation syndrome, hyperlipidemia and diabetes, cognitive impairment, migraines, strokes, mood disorder, interstitial lung disease, hypoxemia, myalgic encephalomyelitis or chronic fatigue syndrome, and then other autoimmune or rheumatologic conditions, including lupus, Sjogren's, fibromyalgia, or other connective tissue disorders. An important feature of long COVID, again, is that it can affect children, adults, regardless of the health, disability, socioeconomic status, age, sex, gender, sexual orientation, race, ethnicity, or geographic location. Long COVID can resolve over a period of months or it can persist over years. It can be diagnosed on clinical grounds. No biomarker currently is available that demonstrates conclusively the presence of long COVID. Long COVID can impair an individual's ability to work, attend school, and care for themselves and have a profound emotional and physical impact on patients, families, and caregivers. So, as we consider the epidemiology of long COVID, it becomes clear that this is a significant public health threat. At present, approximately 9.2 million adults and 0.3 million children in the US have long COVID. In 2023, we saw that amongst adults, 3.6% currently had long COVID and 8.6% have ever had it in their past. As we look at those numbers in children, we see that 0.4% currently had long COVID and 1.4% report ever having it in the past. So while we know that long COVID can affect anyone, there are some groups that are more likely to be predisposed, including females, Hispanic ethnicity, severe acute COVID illness, history of underlying health conditions, those that did not receive the vaccine, and older age. Considering long COVID and the impact on disability, we know that long COVID can restrict the ability of adults and children to perform everyday activities. More than 3 in 5 adults with long COVID report activity limitations, and those numbers are even greater in children, with almost 4 in 5 children reporting long COVID can limit their activities. So as we direct ourselves to the management of long COVID, the principles really are primarily symptom-based supportive care. This involves holistic management, including validation of the symptoms, counseling on prognosis, managing symptom triggers, addressing modifiable risk factors, optimizing medications, having regular follow-up, considering referrals and/or collaborative treatment. Pharmacologic management, we want to consider prioritizing the patient's preference and their shared decision-making and using caution with medications that have potential side effects. Additional resources are available at cmss.org. Thank you.